Asshole Court is a bi-weekly podcast in which a group of lifelong friends choose a controversial public figure and examine their history through available public records and various publications to determine if that person is as much of an asshole as the general public suspects.
We rate the subjects on a not-so-scientific scale, ranging from Mr. Rogers to Hitler, 1 to 11, and average out the three scores in the end for our final number.
Just a reminder, our judgment has no legal weight, is strictly an opinion, and is subject to change at any time, especially in the case of new evidence. It shouldn't be taken seriously, so just don't. There's an art form to doing many things. The art of sales, the art of management, the art of having a difficult conversation. Lots of more menial things as well. The art of tying a good knot. The art of knowing how to pull off a vintage t-shirt you've had stashed for the perfect occasion. And of course, the art of joke telling. And if you go back and look at the comments from our earlier shows, that's something I need to work on apparently. There is one art form that the British in particular have seemed to corner. And that's the market for celebrity pricks that are really good at their job. Now, we've already done a show on Gordon Ramsay, and apparently the second best James Bond, Pierce Brosnan, is a bit of an asshole as well. But today's show subject has made a career of not only being one of the best at what he does, but for bringing a sass to his work that often makes people love him or hate him. Simon Cowell brought his show American Idol to the public back in 2002, but he had long since been one of the top music and television producers in the UK. Remember the Teletubbies? What if I told you they were a product of Simon Cowell? That acid trip of a cartoon from the late 90s where eunuchs ran around making odd sounds and there was a sun with a baby's face on it for some reason? They were just one of the things that Cowell has brought to fame in his career, in addition to, you know, Kelly Clarkson and a few others. With all those people he's interacted with, had control over, pissed off, and crushed the dreams of, has it all been on the up and up, or is there some collateral damage? If Howard Stern is the king of media and Michael Jackson is the king of pop, could Simon be the king of condescension? And how much is a lifetime supply of Just for Men? We'll dive into these questions and more in the Simon Cowell episode of
Asshole Court.
That was terrible.
I've got absolutely no idea why you've had any encouragement whatsoever.
You better hope there's a lot of girls listening to this with the volume turned down.
All right, we are going to dive, here we go, let me open it, there it is, into the inbox here and see some of the recent mail we've gotten here. I've got one here. Daryl, one of our fans on Patreon, he commented on our, it was Dancing Mania.
Yes.
I forget, what was the name of the official title name of that show?
It was something Electric Boogaloo Dancing Manias.
That's right.
It was
all about... these kind of fevers that would occur, maybe fevers that would occur in Europe. And
like dance fever.
Dance fever.
You got a fever.
Dance until they were to exhaustion. It was wild.
Yeah.
So anyway, Daryl told us, he said, I'm a global history teacher, and I always tell kids that the medieval Europe was home to some of the most dumbest, weirdest, and silliest guys in history.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm glad we could reiterate that for you.
And I hope you played it for your class.
Yeah.
Hope you played it for your class and that you got a lot of... angry letters from the parents. It's history. It's an important thing.
Absolutely. We did not sign up for this.
Yes. And we got another one as the, the craze sweeping the nation of AHCs. Everybody cranking their hog, but not always. We got a message from June Powers, a longtime fan, very cool lady. She said, didn't crank the hog, but I breastfed to the podcast. Pretty sure that's not one someone has told you they do yet. It's likely that they have, just not said so. And I was like, well, that's super cool, and I will definitely give you a shout-out for breastfeeding to the show. And she seemed a little creeped out. So
we're still waiting for a response on that one.
I got a thumbs up. I was like, oh, yeah, sorry about that.
Creeper.
That's it. And I guess I shouldn't have said, you know, jugs in the comment.
So Dave, our friend on Patreon, also commented.
Yeah.
It wasn't cranking his hog either. It was to the O.J. Simpson episode.
Okay.
He said he murdered his ex-wife and her friend while listening to this episode.
Well, that's, I mean,
sorry,
it's the spirit
too much
of the season.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Spirit of the season, you know.
That's
there
right.
We go. There we go.
The gift that keeps on giving.
I guess.
Spousal abuse and murder. That's pretty fucked up.
And the last one we had, and I guess it'll bring some clarity on the OJ show from a couple weeks ago. So obviously with OJ dying, we had already done his show. It was good. There wasn't a whole lot of new news, but no. To kind of just put him back kind of, you know, in your recent memory, kind of not a tribute. I don't know if we're
tribute
to him. Yeah. But, you know.
I had violent diarrhea, couldn't make it to the recording, and it was like, hey, OJ died. So
you're in the clear, Mikey.
It's exactly, yeah. Well, I was just thinking is while I was taking a shit about OJ Simpson for some reason, and I was like, it makes perfect sense.
But our friend Judy was a little confused. And
sorry,
she said,
Judy.
Is this the same episode from 2022? Same shout out to Jenny, and I think it's Buddy's sister, turned 40 twice in 2022 and now 2024.
What? Strangely enough, I can't believe that was 2 years ago. God help us.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. That seems like, I don't know.
Very close to that AARP episode we're going to do here pretty soon. So we apologize. Sometimes we'll have to drop a reboot because Mikey has violent diarrhea, can't make it to recording.
Or the timing of pop culture just happens to be in our favor.
Exactly.
And we've done a show about somebody who just dies. So,
we'll be a little bit more clear about that in the future.
Yeah,
so.
Yes. Sorry about that. But our P. Diddy show was new.
Yes.
So yeah, I guess that definitely we led to some confusion.
The verbiage here is a revisit versus a reboot.
Yeah. We should have put rerun, maybe.
Yeah. You fucking idiots out there. Yeah. You didn't know the difference between the two. I'm totally kidding.
No. But we are very pleased that he's dead, so.
Yeah. Very much so. And as I was telling Randy as we were recording the new intro, I did see Jay Moore was doing a little bit on, he was like doing a Norm MacDonald bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he was like, O.J. Simpson died. I haven't seen him around up here.
Yeah. It's true. R.I.P. Norm MacDonald. We were not happy that you died. I kept running his, that's my lucky stabbing hat joke over and over again.
I did watch the video. I think he was at the ESPYs.
Yes.
Where he was given out, I think it was either Rookie of the Year or Athlete of the Year, something like that.
Yeah.
And and it was four football players, and he was like, great accomplishment. You guys didn't even have to kill your wife and her friend.
Yeah,
Norm. Your wife and a waiter. Your ex-wife and a waiter. Yeah.
Norm was it.
And everybody's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He that made him a bit more of a legend.
All right. So for the show, we did a double check on our list, and we don't see any suggestions for Simon Cowell, but I'm sure there probably have been over the years. If there is any, go into the comments and let us know. We'll be sure to give you credit on the next show.
Please do. Hope,
here, found one. It's P. Abdul.
Ah, there it is. Yes.
There we go. Yeah.
So, yeah, whoever you are, P. Abdul.
Straight up now tell me at gmail.com.
I appreciate that.
Awesome. All right. So, one, how the hell did you people miss this, not giving us the show suggestion if we didn't get any suggestions?
Somebody definitely did.
Somebody did. Probably like in an Instagram comment or something
right now.
Sorry about
that. They're shaking their fist at the speakers right now.
Exactly right.
With that being said, let's get some pre-show scores for Simon Cowell. Buddy, kick us off.
All right, so Simon Cowell, you know, of course, everybody knows this guy. I really haven't been keeping up with him over the past decade or so, but I remember when American Idol came out, and that show was I remember that whole first wave of reality TV shows, in a sense. I remember Survivor.
Yeah. That first season of American Idol was big.
It was huge.
Everybody. That was like must-watch TV.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that was crazy. And also, one of the funny things I remember is, do you remember who the final two were?
You read my mind, buddy.
Really?
A little sweet.
Kelly Clarkson
and Justin
Little Sweet.
Yeah, Justin Guarini. Yeah. Y'all remember Justin Guarini?
Yeah, he's Little Sweet from the Dr. Pepper commercials.
Yeah, which I think he lost that gig too.
I pulled up a picture here of Justin Guarini.
Yeah,
What a different world we would live in if Justin Guarini had won instead of Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah. She would be doing Little Sweet.
Yeah. You know who Little Sweet is?
No, I don't.
Google Little Sweet.
Yeah, he's on Dr. Pepper commercials. It was kind of a strange setup. It seemed like it was those ones where they're like, look, these kids these days, they love just, you know, sort of erratic, non sequitur humor. Let's do this guy as a tiny little man that loves Dr. Pepper and sings like Little Richard.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's there he is, buddy.
Oh, I please hope that everybody who's listening to this show right now, if you don't know about Lil Sweet, just type in Google search Lil Sweet Dr. Pepper, and there's is that Justin Guarini?
It is 100%.
Yeah. There you go.
He looks like the
Kelly Clarkson has her own show and is like worth $500 million.
Yeah. And we've got Little Sweet.
That's what second place will get you.
Hey, I would be happy to have the Little Sweet gig.
I would
be honest.
Be happy. Yeah, we're just.
I would definitely be working a very different job, which is not.
You'd have a podcast, though.
I would. Yeah. The Little Sweet podcast.
Little Sweet podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it would be sponsored by Mr. Pibb. I'd fuck all y'all up.
That's awesome. But Simon Cowell, you know, I really only know him from that time of like around the first couple seasons of American Idol. And I remember he was a big jackass on that show. You know, he would sit there and tell the contestants, you know, like, I've heard better people singing outside the subway than you right now. Or
it's John Lennon.
He did a very Liverpudlian accent.
Or it'd be like, you know, like, that's a 1.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And like, just, you know, a complete asshole. And I wonder if, in a sense, he was kind of like the Howard Stern of the reality shows, like that asshole. Because I know there was a lot of people that copied him over the years.
Oh, yeah.
That's him trashing people on those first couple episodes is what got everybody talking.
Everybody.
They were like, did you see that British guy bombing on the dude? And the thing was, it was cathartic because they did suck.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, that's what somebody should say.
They would bring
in,
like, the freak shows. Now they just bring in people that are really good.
Yeah.
And it's like a competition. Back then, it was like, here's this freak from Montana that's never seen a girl.
That's true.
Yeah, but, like, even back then, like, I know, especially, like, second season, third season, they would have like almost plants on the show.
Oh, 100%.
That, you know, that would just suck.
Yeah.
And, you know, like he would call them out. But even first season, they were like people that were giving it their all, you know, and they sucked. Like,
there was no frame of reference. They didn't know what they were getting into.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Second season, you're like, I'm going to get fucking wrecked. First season, you're just like, oh, there's a nice British man. It's Paul Abdul.
Oh, man. Those people would stand in line for so many hours to get their little shot. And,
exactly.
Oh, my God.
I had an ex-girlfriend that she tried out.
Oh, really?
She tried out. She had a good voice, legitimately good voice. And she told me how the process worked. And it was very much obvious that those people that sucked were brought in front of those main judges for a reason. You know what I mean?
The tens and the ones were brought in.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which, look, it made for great television.
Yeah.
It did. And here we are talking about it, you know, 20 plus years later.
22 years later.
So, God. But yeah, so that's really all I have is that frame of reference for him is mostly like that first, like that 5 years, you know, from back then. And for me, I think he was playing more of a character, more so than that's how he actually lives his life.
Yeah.
I think that he just like saw an in right there and he cashed in on it. I really don't think that he is an asshole in his day-to-day life, but I don't know. Maybe he is, or, you know, maybe we've gone through different cycles of him where maybe he was a asshole in his earlier years. Cause I mean, like, he's been in the public eye for now for long 20 time. Plus years,
yeah. Oh, long time,
you know? So, I think we're going to get different seasons of Simon Cowell, but overall, you know, this is Asshole Court, and for me, I've got to say that, you know, I'm going to judge you on your whole body of work, and without hearing the episode and before I did any of the research, you know, initially I thought I was going to split the uprights at a 5.5, but I think I'm going to push them up into pre-show 6.0 territory.
Okay.
Sure. Put them up there with our original Steven Seagal.
All right.
That's right.
Not re-scored Steven Seagal. So yeah, I've got them pre-show at a 6.0.
All right. 6.0 for Buddy. Mikey, what you got?
Yeah, so Buddy says he's going to judge him on his whole body of work. I'm just going to judge him on one part of his body, and that's his fucking face, man. And the thing is, something horrible has happened to Simon Cowell in the past 10 years. I don't pay any attention to the man. Again, you know, I'm in the same boat as Buddy here. He was a bit of a legend for a second there when American Idol first came out, and he just loved watching him level these people that were just disconnected with their actual talents. So I enjoyed it or whatever, but you know, I didn't watch the second season. I literally watched season one, never watched it again. Didn't really pay any attention. And then it was about a couple years ago, something popped up and I was like, who the fuck is that guy? It vaguely looks like Simon Cowell, and it was. But if he had been made into a Madame Tussauds wax figure where the AC had broken in the museum.
Like if a flamethrower got taken to his face for like just 3 seconds.
Yes. And I'm sure I'm going to find out that it's not out of vanity, but something horrible happened to him and I'll feel bad about it. But my judgment for Simon Cowell is going to be based on the judgment for myself, because I feel he's my spirit animal in those first couple seasons. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like witty fucking breakdowns of people and saying shit that was just unnecessarily mean, but also necessary for the universe to write things.
For the betterment.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to give him a 5. I score myself a 5. Simon Cowell is a 5.
All right. 5.0 for Mikey.
Randy, bring us home.
All right. So obviously American Idol fame, you know, there's the whole shtick with like the insults and the cutdowns. Yeah. And it was, I mean, it was must watch TV.
Some of them were very good.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
They were good. Harsh,
yeah,
but good.
Yeah. But it's to live like your whole persona is that. It's a bit, I don't know, I don't call it shticky, because he also is like behind the scenes doing a whole bunch of shit here.
Of course. Like, I mean, you've got, what is it?
X Factor,
that, and like, and everything that we have here in the States, there's like a British version of it.
Yep.
It's the easiest thing ever. It's copy paste.
And most of them came from Britain over to the U.S.
Yeah, so.
Anyway, pre-show, I'm thinking kind of where on this scale he's going to fall. I got him at a 5.92. Just above Mike Tyson, who is at a 5.91.
Excellent. All right, yeah.
Not quite 6.0 territory, but we're getting up there a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right. 5.92 from Randy. All right. With a 6.0 from Buddy, a 5.0 from Mikey, and a 5.92 from Randy, Simon Cowell's pre-show asshole score is a 5.64.
All right, 5.64, just a shade above Kurt Cobain, who came in at a 5.63, and just below Mark Zuckerberg at a 5.67.
Okay. Oh, that is interesting territory.
So Kurt Cobain, Simon Cowell, and Zuckerberg is a pre-show.
Have you seen Zuck lately with his beard?
No.
Like, somebody posted up a picture of him when he was robotic one, and then they go, look, someone got the human update. Because he looked like you, like he's a real boy. It was Pinocchio style. He's a real man now.
Oh, that's great.
That's hilarious.
Awesome. Hell yeah. All right, boys, you ready to do it?
Let's do it.
That's a big yeah for me, dog.
Simon Philip Cowell was born on October 7th, 1959, in Lambeth, London, to mother Julie and his father, Eric Selig Philip Cowell.
Selig?
Yeah.
S-E-L-I-G?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Sure is a fancy name, and the fancy name seemed to fit the Cowell family. Eric Cowell was an estate agent, property developer, and music industry executive.
Huh.
Simon grew up alongside his three half-brothers, his half-sister, and his brother Nicholas, who was a couple years younger than Simon. The town the Cowells moved to shortly after he was born was a village named Elstree in Hertfordshire. It's kind of out in the country. The small town was steeped in show business during the swinging 60s when Cowell was growing up, thanks to two major film studios nearby.
Okay.
The most prestigious of these was the Elstree Film Studios, which were built in the 20s. Alfred Hitchcock used the studios, and it soon became a mainstay of the British cinema industry. By the 60s, when the Cowells moved into the area, the studios were also being used by the television industry, with shows such as The Saint and The Avengers being shot there.
Hmm.
Consequently, the suburban village of Elstree became a bubbly celebrity haunt, where all the stars used to come to work and party, including Bette Davis, Roger Moore, and Gregory Peck. That's Betty Davis, right?
Yeah, I was like, Betty Davis?
Bette Davis? Yeah.
Bette Davis. Expensive cars were seen on the village lanes, famous faces were glimmering through the windows, and night champagne corks could be heard popping at posh parties around town. The Cowell family moved into a 19th century 8-bedroom home on Barnett Lane called Abbott's Mead. So his house growing up had a fucking name.
Yeah.
If that tells you anything
on
about
Abbott's Mead, that's like, I live on Priest Kegger.
It was in Barnett Lane, and it was called Abbott's Mead.
Yeah.
It was the estate. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a Priest Kegger.
And he's got the 8-bedroom house that's reminding me of like the Forrest Gump house, you know, that he grew up in.
That's right.
The mom rented out all the rooms and
or
stuff.
Kid Rock's
that's
house.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was set on 5 acres of private woodland. And was a grand building from the outside.
Ah, he was a member of the landed gentry.
That's right.
A gentleman.
I'm telling you, they were rich. Those types of homes in the UK, that's, you got some fucking money, man.
Oh, for sure. Especially, and they are like estates.
Yeah, estates. Yeah.
Money. Simon was busy during this time trying to blend in. He sat on Bette Davis's knee while she learned her script, watched Roger Moore recording The Saint, and hitched a ride around the studios with his brother Tony, who had found work at the studio as a runner. He did, however, really like music. Well, some of it anyway. The first record he ever owned was She Loves You by the Beatles, which was released in the UK on August 23, 1963. It wasn't just the Fab Four music that captured young Cowell's attention. He admired their rock and roll lifestyle of fast cars, champagne, parties, and doting young women. Yeah. So it sounds like he would have been a big fan of Ric Flair as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Woo! That's exactly right.
Keith Moon, the drummer from The Who, was the, that's your rock god right there. I mean, he ran over his butler. That's as rock and roll as it gets.
As much as Cowell loved the Fab Four as a boy, he was ever the critic and very outspoken about the music he didn't like as well. This included the songs of jazz and swing singers such as Frank Sinatra, Charles Aznavour, and Shirley Bassey, all of whom his parents loved. But he has since become a major fan of Sinatra, however.
It's pretty standard. I mean, you always hate your parents' music. Maybe you don't hate it. I don't know. I hated my mom's music because she had a horrible taste in music.
I think that's just universal. You never really love what your parents love, no matter how good it is during that time.
Well, this next little story tells a little bit about that. Back then, he became so frustrated by his parents' musical taste that he hid the records and even on one particular occasion grabbed a screwdriver and inflicted a vicious scratch on one of his mother's favorite albums.
Ooh.
All right, yep. Little fucking bastard.
Yeah.
You know, and I often think about that because, like, I remember when I was growing up, like, riding anywhere with my parents, you know, it was always what my dad wanted to listen to. Yeah. It was never what we wanted to listen to.
Yeah.
And but now, like, as I've grown up, it's like, you know, I let my kids kind of, like, decide, you know, like, at least half and half, you know.
Hell no, I ain't listening to that. No, it depends. If it's something that I want to listen to as well, then it works.
My son brings his own adapter when he rides with me because he just gets in and plugs in the aux cable. And
As a kid, though, like, my dad had pretty good taste in music, so he got me into, like, Pink Floyd, like, the Beach Boys, stuff like that. My mom, nothing but, like, Michael Bolton. Seriously. Yeah. Like, that album, that tape, Timeless, was just basically surgically implanted into our Toyota Previa's player, and we all hated it except for my mom, and it just makes me think about the power dynamics.
My parents had pretty good taste in music. My dad really liked The Doors, and my mom really liked like Earth, Wind, and Fire, and a lot like the 70s, but like the 60s music too, like the Yakety Yak, and like a lot of on the Stand By Me soundtrack. Pretty much play that, and it's, you know,
that's classics.
Absolutely it is. So Simon attended Radlett Preparatory School and another school called Licensed Victualler School in a town called Ascot. Just sounds pretentious as
Ascot.
Fuck.
Ascot. Well, Ascot's, I'm going to start bringing those back.
Yes. You should, Mikey.
I mean,
if any of the three of us are going to bring that back, it's going
to
be you.
You know, in the 60s, they got real big again. And I mean, there's no way to make a tie look gayer. but that's what I'm going for at this point. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to bring it back and it's going to be part of the C-suites across America.
The Ascot.
Yeah.
And Cowell did attend the private Dover College, which isn't actually a college. It's a really high-end boarding school in England.
How many is it? God, he went to like four different boarding schools.
Well, one's a prep school and then the Victualler School for just a year and then Dover College. So,
okay.
Three schools.
I don't understand how that stuff works over there. Maybe our UK fans can tell me because I'm like, I understand what university is.
I was going to explain that to you.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this is prep school. And you're like, prep for?
Is it high school? Or
yeah, I don't understand.
Yeah. We're dumb.
Grade 11
or
whatever.
It turned out school was definitely not his thing, and Simon rebelled terribly after growing bored at school and had several other run-ins with the law. He was cautioned by police in Watford after pointing a pea-shooting gun at a terrified bus driver and demanding he drive.
Okay, it's fucked up.
He said, I stole my dad's car at 10 and crashed it. Then when I was 12, I hijacked the bus with a pea gun. I thought it wouldn't be taken seriously, but the driver called the police and I was arrested.
Try that shit over here, homie. That's what we call suicide by cop.
He said, I remember going back home and my mom being furious.
No, everybody. He is definitely from Liverpool at this point. We've decided this.
He also revealed how he nearly burned down his family's house after setting fire to the white beard from a Santa costume while trying to prove that he wasn't real to his younger brother. Simon, whose son Eric is now 8, told the son, I was so bad when I was Eric's age. I was a nightmare. I was drinking and smoking at age 8, and I once nearly burned the house. I was trying to prove to my brother that Father Christmas wasn't real, so I found the costume and set fire to the beard. I dropped it on the sofa, and the sofa caught on fire. The whole room went up. Luckily, my older brother smelled the smoke and found us. Then the fire brigade came.
Can you imagine a drunk 8-year-old? I just can't
you're
quite.
You're still back on the drinking and smoking thing?
At 8, yeah, normally, like, I get it. You're 12. It's whatever, you know. All of us
it's
started.
Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, we hit 12, 13, 14. We started toying around with stuff. Yeah. 8 years old.
That's like second grade.
Yeah, he was like, "Oh man, it's been a rough day."
I just
prep school
some kid like the 1920s on the streets
smoking a cig.
Yeah, if you're born like 1912.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, those old black and white. Yeah, those black and white photos where it shows the kids. Yeah. They look rough
selling,
and gruff,
selling newspapers, burning a heater.
You've already got like, you've already got a family to pay for at that point.
I do see you're Italian.
I saw that baby out on the corner. I was like, "Baby, what are you doing?"
That's for real. I just wow, a drunk 8-year-old, and then also come on. Man, I mean, there's other ways to prove that Santa's not real besides lighting his beard on fire.
Simon said my mom was the disciplinarian and my dad was always the soft one. He said so many things that stuck with me, but I can't remember him ever raising his voice to me.
I thought he was gonna say he said so many important things that I can't remember any of. I was like, yes.
He said, but I was so bad, living on the edge, but I was smart, but I wasn't very academic. I could never have been a doctor and I had very low boredom threshold. So it was school after school, and then I was out at 16. Mm. So, yep, at 16 years old, he got out of school.
Survivorship bias, too. He's like, I just was too bored with all of that.
Yeah.
I've become massively successful. School's not for everybody.
Have you seen my IQ test?
Yes, I'm waiting for that to get whipped out.
Nope, not even going down that road with him. Okay. Yep. Cowell took a few menial jobs, including, according to his brother Tony, working as a runner on Stanley Kubrick's 1980 horror film The Shining.
What does a runner do?
Runs around to get shit, move stuff.
So like, that's a gopher, basically.
Kind of, yeah.
And he was on The Shining. Okay, fascinating.
But did not get along well with his colleagues and bosses until his father, who was an executive at EMI Music, managed to get him a job in the mailroom there.
Okay.
Growing up near London in the 80s, the punk scene had taken on a life of its own. But as no surprise, the raucous, wild environment wasn't exactly Simon's thing either. He said, I went to a Stranglers gig and I thought, this is just the worst night I've ever had in my life. Everyone was gobbing on each other. Literally, I was so not into that. And gobbing, I guess, is kind of like spitting, like shaking your head and kind of spitting all over
that
the place.
That sounds about right for a punk show in the 80s.
The precursor to the mosh pit.
Yeah, but you're kind of just flailing your arms and flailing your head.
Yeah, fuck off! Yeah!
There it is. He said, I never felt comfortable being in a horrible club where people are just spitting on each other. I like big concerts. I didn't get it. I wasn't that angry. I mean, I generally wasn't, and I think they were. I didn't want to be angry, and I wasn't anti-establishment or anti-royals. I wasn't really anti-anything. So Simon knew that music was in his future, but things at the mailroom didn't work out, and he wound up quitting the job that his dad got him.
So he was anti-anti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that grunge before it was grunge?
I think it's definitely a Generation X sort of ethos of just like, I don't give a fuck, man. I'm not against anything, man. But I will say this, although I do love punk music, his description of that night is accurate. Getting spit on by a lot of strangers sounds bad.
Sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Like, and I imagine like a dark fucking smoky club with like 200 people jammed into it,
leather jackets.
The sound
is
quality is just like piercing your ears.
Spit on, just fucking somebody like bumps into you with their stud necklace or whatever it is. You're like, ow!
Got a puncture.
And someone spits you in your neck. Yeah, and there's like they've got Hep A.
Spit in the puncture. Yeah, yeah.
That would be the worst night ever.
Shortly after he left the mailroom, he formed Fanfare Records with a guy named Ian Burton, and they initially sold exercise videos and music from acts such as the Italian orchestra Rondo Venezzano.
Okay.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, but still, exercise videos and Italian opera?
Yeah.
That's a wild, very eclectic product mix.
Figuring out a way to make money, that's exactly right. He had his first hit song in 1986 with a song called So Macho by a group called Sonata. Some of Cowell's early successes came through Stock Aitman Waterman, which was the production company who produced a number of hits in the 80s. However, in 1989, the company went under, with Pete Waterman forced to put a freeze on Fanfare's assets and taking Cowell's Porsche as compensation for outstanding production and royalties payments. Amid the company's implosion, Cowell nearly went bankrupt.
God. So macho. There was a lot of those songs in the 80s where they talked about macho.
Yeah.
That's another word. I'm bringing the ascot back, and I'm bringing the word macho back. First of all, the most macho of us here is Randy, I would say. You know, he's the most manly.
So it's not going to be Mikey Macho Man?
No, I'm the least macho of us.
So you're saying I could have a good shot of pulling off the ascot.
You think so?
In a public setting. Well,
I could see you actually wearing one, though.
I could. I would. Yeah. You know me. You know me.
You would.
My wife says that I dress unapologetically me.
Yeah. Randy is dying to wear French cuffs as much as possible, and Ascot is one step above the French cuffs.
Some pantaloons, too, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more of a sort of a classic British gentleman's outfit.
Mikey looks like a British cop. Like a British detective. Half the time you see him, he's got like a black and white suit on.
Yeah,
with the standard tie. Looks like he's getting ready to crack the case.
That's why I'm getting ready to crack the case and you know, weird out with some psychedelic music in my Ascot, because things are changing up here.
He then found a job with BMG as an A&R consultant and set up S Records under the BMG label.
F-U-C-K.
He restarted his career in the music business by creating novelty records with acts such as the Puppets' Zig and Zag, the Power Rangers,
and
Worldwide Wrestling Foundation.
He did Power Rangers?
Power Rangers. He did a novelty record with the Power Rangers, so their record.
Oh, my God. I bet that was fucking horrendous.
Oh, God.
Yep. So Zig and Zag, which is like a British cartoon.
Yeah.
Power Rangers and WWF Wrestling.
With Vince McMahon?
Yeah. He created the novelty record.
Yeah. I want to make a Vince McMahon taking a shit on people joke, but I don't have anything in the tank right now.
Check out our Vince McMahon episode. In 1995, through his persistence, he persuaded two actors, Robson Green and Jerome Flynn.
Yeah. I'm kidding. I have no clue.
From the UK television drama series Soldier, Soldier, Mikey.
Ah, yes.
To sign with him and record the song Unchained Melody, which they had performed on the show. The recording by the duo, now named Robson and Jerome, quickly reached number one in the UK, staying at the top of the chart for 7 weeks. It became the best-selling single of 1995, and their self-titled album released later in the year also became the best-selling album of 1995. They released another album and two more singles before disbanding and sold 7 million albums and 5 million singles in total. According to Simon, they made him his first $1 million.
Okay, and what was their names again?
They were Robson and Jerome.
Jerome. And what was Jerome's last name?
Flynn.
Jerome Flynn. Okay, yep. There you go. Yes.
It wasn't Green and Flynn. It was Robson and Jerome.
Robson and Jerome.
There we go.
Yep.
That's it. I mean, those names are as British as beans and toast. You know what I'm saying?
Some Simon Garfunkel.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Later, he signed acts including Five. I don't know if you remember them.
I remember them, but I didn't listen to them.
Yep. Westlife.
Remember that somehow. No. It sounds like a church that's around, like, down the street.
And as I mentioned in the intro read, the Teletubbies.
Ballin'.
Yep. Interesting. In 2001, Cowell was given the role of judge on the first series of Pop Idol, a show that he and the show creator Simon Fuller were able to successfully pitch to ITV. Maggie Brown from The Guardian stated, "The show became a seminal reality entertainment format once on air that autumn. Cowell's S Records signed the top two finishers of the first season of Pop Idol, Will Young and Gareth Gates, both whom went on to have number one UK hits, and they were the top two best-selling singles of 2002 in the decade of the 2000s.
Wow, that's so, guys
that we talked about, Kelly Clarkson and Justin Guarini, these guys, Will Young and Gareth Gates, like, blew up over there.
It's so wild how the success does not cross over the pond.
Right.
Because I don't have a fucking clue who they are.
Yeah, I've never heard of either of those two guys.
I'm trying to think of who from, I was about to say the Jonas Brothers, but they're not.
No, I mean, there's a lot of good rock bands. Obviously, Radiohead. I mean, you can go, seriously.
There's a lot of music that's good that comes over there,
the pop music doesn't, except for the Spice Girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spice Girls were, that was just... But, global.
That was kind of like NSYNC for America in a sense.
But it's pop. It's pop.
Yeah.
He also became a judge on the first season of American Idol in 2002. With his notoriously critical reputation, Cowell has become legendary for his insults and condescending tone. His closest predecessor was British TV critic Nina Myskow, who in the 1980s became known for her harsh put-downs in New Faces, which was a talent show that Cowell cited as an influence. Cowell's prominence grew, fed by his signature phrase, "I don't mean to be rude," but inevitably followed by an unsparingly blunt appraisal of the contestant's talents, personality, or even physical appearance.
Yeah, that's the British version of "with all due respect."
With all due respect, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Don't mean to be rude here, but it looks like your mother fucked a baboon.
I said with all due respect.
Yeah. But also, what was that lady's name? Because I have a lot of YouTube I'm going to be catching up on.
Yeah.
Hades shows where she's dogging the fuck out of people.
Nina Myskow. M-Y-S-K-O-W.
God, it's going to be awesome, too, because she'd be dogging like some new wave kids with like that Flock of Seagulls haircut.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So over the years, Simon put a lot of contestants on blast, and I've compiled what can be considered as a Simon Cowell's greatest hits list.
Thank you. I was going to ask if you did this.
I did.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm gonna start. So just imagine you're on American Idol.
Yes.
And you get up there, and you've been practicing at home for months, and you know that you've heard about the show.
You're convinced that you are going, this is it. This is your life-changing moment here because you are going to be famous.
You're
going to
shoot your shot.
Yeah.
That's it.
So heads up, there are 17 of these I'm getting ready to read.
I'm okay with that.
All right.
All right, here's the first one. And I don't think I'll do his accent for all of them because I'll whine.
Try it.
The Liverpool accent.
Try it first and let's see how it goes.
I don't know how he sounds. I mean, I do, but.
We'll try it. Try it. Just one, at least.
Do it. Do it now.
It was absolutely terrible in most parts. I mean, it was like being at a funeral for the first half.
Pretty good. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Right. Also, the insult itself was a little weak, but the accent, pretty good.
I'm going to read it in normal voice then.
Okay.
First of all, the dress is completely wrong, and then you sang the song out of tune and a bit like a baby.
Called her out on her outfit and?
Yep.
Yeah, that's the 1-2.
If the criteria was to vote people for singing every note out of tune, you would win tonight.
He set it up like it was going to be a compliment, but it wasn't.
Came straight out of the gate on this one. Not in a billion years. There's only so many words I can drag out of my vocabulary to say how awful that was.
God, that's, yeah. You go home and you know what? You just quit music.
Here you go. That song was like going to a zoo or something. I mean, the noises were beyond anything I've ever, ever heard. Damn. And apparently this person was a lifeguard. If your lifeguard duties were as good as your singing, a lot of people would be drowning.
I think it would be better if he just said a lot of people would die. But it still works either way.
Do you have a singing teacher? Get a lawyer and sue her.
Oh, man. That one, yeah. That was a bit of a shoehorn, yep. There, wasn't it?
And we're crescending into the top 10 here.
Okay.
You actually sing like a train going off the rails. You sort of start off in tune, and then it goes completely off and very, very fast.
I thought he was going to say, you sing like a tramp. I was like, what is
Lady in the Tramp.
There's as much of a chance of you being a pop star or a rock star as me flying to the moon tomorrow morning for breakfast.
Damn.
It was a bit like ordering a hamburger and only getting the bun.
Yeah.
Last year, I described someone as being the worst singer in America. I think you're possibly the worst singer in the world.
That one hits. That one slaps, bro.
It's like the opposite of the compliment sandwich.
Oh, you know? Yeah, like, exactly.
I wonder what he found out before this next one. He said, I'm tempted to ask you if you sang that the night before your wife left you.
Oh, my God. Okay. Now we've gone too far.
That's what I'm saying. If he knew the guy's wife had left him and he said that,
that's
fucked.
Yeah.
I've been practicing for the past year. My wife left me and
emptied the bank account, took the kids, moved to her mom's.
I am utterly shocked at that one. Wow. Wow.
She said I was never going to be a singer, but yeah. I'm going to shoot my shot.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I fucked your bitch, you fat motherfucker.
The next one is, you have the personality of a handle.
Okay. That's a British-ism,
yeah.
I think.
Top four. You're probably the most disillusioned group of people we've ever had in this competition, and that's the truth. I think the whole group is horrendous. You have absolutely zero edge, no originality. I think individually you're weak. I think as a group you're even worse. Absolutely zero chance you guys will ever, ever, ever have a successful career.
A simple no would
suffice, you asshole.
That's what I've watched. I just recently got to watch Billy Madison with my son, which is just a delight. If you have a boy and he started getting into his teenage years, you can watch these comedies with him. Well, Billy Madison has been my son's favorite, which was surprising me, even though I also love it. But when he did the, he said, everyone in this room is now dumber for having heard you. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your souls. My son has been repeating that to me randomly throughout the course of the past 2 weeks.
Nice.
That is the second time I've heard that quote this week. That's kind of
interesting.
Everybody's realizing how good Billy Madison
is.
And I think this next contestant might have been from Lithuania.
Okay.
said, I don't know what cats being squashed sound like in Lithuania, but now I have a pretty good idea.
Oh, well, that's, yes, that do, that's very, you're a detective. They are from Lithuania.
On the case.
That's
I need to steal your outfit, though.
Elementary, elementary, my dear Watson.
That's right. All right, top two. This one is pretty good. Holly, your mouth is far, far too big when you sing. I mean, it was like looking into a cave. I've never seen anything so huge in my life.
Dang, I feel like there's some stuff you can add on the end of that.
Yeah.
This isn't the career track for you, but I do have somebody that you should call.
It's a guy sitting on the
black
couch.
That's right, yeah. It's
Red
Randy.
Light District.
It's Randy. he's about this one. That's a big yes from me, dog.
And you see Randy Thomas behind the white couch?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And then the top, you know, let's threaten to kill someone. If you had lived 2,000 years ago and sung like that, I think they would have stoned you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man. I thought for some reason there was going to be some mention of Jesus in there because of the 2,000 years, but he just wanted to let him know.
That was rough.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see the reactions to this as well. I've got a lot of YouTubing to do here over the next week.
That was definitely his thing, right?
100%.
That was his shtick. And a lot of it, they said, was influenced by one of his publicists that would help feed him some of the cutdowns, right?
Like, I wonder if he had like an earpiece in and was like saying
it. I think
it
was probably screened.
Yeah.
And once they hit the TV, they had.
He said, what is but out that one? He's like, man, she's got some dick-sucking lips. Say something about that. Big old mouth on that one. So I also want to point this out here. I think my memory of his cutdowns was better than they were in actuality.
Yeah.
I feel like I could have devastated people significantly worse.
We got to remember the scenario, too. Like, they just get done, like, pouring their heart out.
Yeah.
And they're sweating and waiting to hear it.
Yeah.
And, like, some of the judges might have been like, yeah, you know, it was pretty good. And then he's like, you would have died if you just sang like that 2,000 years ago.
It's true. It's true.
And you also got to remember the time, too. Like, this is 2002, 3, 4. You know, like, reality TV's in its infancy at this point. Not what we expect out of reality TV today, in a sense.
I'm thinking that my sort of, you know, foundational thing are diss tracks from rap music. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you hear it, you know, and you're just like, oh man, so clever. The turn of phrase is so good. That guy's crying at home now, and he thought he was tough. And I feel like I would really, I mean, because this was his thing. Imagine Eminem in the early 2000s was notorious not for just being only a white rapper, but being an incredible diss track deliverer.
Sure.
He devastated careers, and he got really good at it. I feel like Simon could have put in a little work on this one.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
But he probably did devastate some careers. Like,
oh, he
did. That's like what I'm wondering here, and this is where his score will kind of like go up a little bit. Like, what happened to these people when they went home?
Oh, buddy, I'm glad you brought that up. We're going to segue into that here momentarily.
Okay. Oh, nice, nice.
On January 11th, 2010, Cowell's exit from American Idol was made official. 1 year after Cowell left American Idol, the show eventually completed its 8th consecutive season of leadership amongst all primetime programs in the U.S., marking the longest annual winning streak in the ratings U.S. television history.
Gosh.
Yep. The 2010 season was Cowell's last on the show, and he was replaced by Steven Tyler from Aerosmith.
Horrible choice.
Oh, yeah, that's a rough choice.
He looks like an old woman.
He does.
It was also announced that Fox had acquired the rights to the X Factor USA, an American version of the British show The X Factor that launched in 2011.
Cha-ching!
With all the success that Simon's shows were realizing, there was still a little trouble a-brewing behind the scenes with some contestants. Katie Wassel was a former contestant on X Factor who, after her time on the show, decided to go to law school and become a lawyer with the aim of taking legal action against Simon Cowell's Psycho Entertainment, believing that her experience on the show has ruined her life.
Oh, man.
There we go.
Dude.
Literally went to law school with the aim of going after him.
That was a legitimate villain origin story right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's awesome. Good for her. She was like, I'm not taking this sitting down. What can I do? I could shoot him. That's too easy. I'll go to law school.
I'll steal all his fucking money.
I would like to know what her level of success was.
I'll tell you.
Yes.
In 2010, Wassel participated in the widely known British singing competition where she faced challenges and was labeled the most hated contestant of the season, drawing widespread negative attention.
Sounds like that's a bit of a her problem, too.
You know. During her time on the show, she faced not only online threats, but also grappled with panic attacks and thoughts of self-harm. These experiences left a lasting mark on her, leading her to seek therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder in the years following her appearance. In a recent interview with The Times, Wassel openly stated that the show ruined my life. This sentiment motivated her to establish the OWHL Foundation in April of 21. The foundation aims to protect well-being, human rights, and creative freedom in the industry.
OWHL?
It is OWHL. That's
owl.
Right.
Owl. Owl. Welcome to the silent auction for the owl competition. You remember me. You hated me.
The trauma that she experienced on the show, Mikey, led to her pursuing a law degree, according to The Times.
Yeah.
She alleges a breach of duty of care during her time on the show and aims to address the perceived power imbalance in the industry. Wassel and her legal team have initiated a formal letter of claim to Psycho Entertainment, which is S-Y-C-O, not yeah. Psycho, but Psycho.
Psycho.
Still. Yeah. They're like, and who is the defendant? Yeah. Psycho Entertainment. So you're saying that Psycho Entertainment treated you poorly.
In her letter, she outlines her intent, stating, I am pursuing a civil case of personal injury under negligence, which pertains to duty of care. Her goal is to contribute positively by leveraging her experiences to build a safer industry for newcomers, seeking justice and peace for all involved.
AKA getting paid, boy.
I'm just trying to create a safe space, yeah. Like at the QTs.
It's much more important that nobody gets hated by the entire nation like I did. And also, it's important that I get fucking paid, boy.
Come join us at Psycho.
At Owl.
It's Owl, yeah. Reflecting on her past, Wassel recalled, I look back at the paparazzi pictures at the time, and I honestly look like an addict. I was not. I didn't eat, and I didn't sleep. She spoke of feeling like a commodity owned by others. These challenges led to her seeking therapy and counseling as her time on the show, and she continues to process the aftermath even today. Wassel is concerned about the trend in reality TV where individuals face public ridicule for entertainment purposes. She believes that society has become desensitized to the emotional toll it can take.
All of that is true. Honestly, it is. But here's the thing. You wanted to be a reality TV star. That's why you went on the show.
Yeah. You and put yourself out there.
You should honestly be paying Simon Cowell for that law degree because that's a much better option than being like reality star famous where they spot you at Burger King, but you're still eating at Burger King.
Yeah. that's like the Will Smith after his album went famous, but he still had no money and he was like riding the bus everywhere. Yeah. Like, you're not Will Smith.
Yeah.
You're like 10 steps down from that.
I sympathize with her, but I also just, you know, I don't know. I think it's a little bit of bullshit.
You're looking for fame. You're looking to get into the limelight and it doesn't work out and you're trying to blame everybody else for it.
Responding to Wassel's legal actions, Fremantle, co-producers of The X Factor, emphasized their commitment to supporting contestants. They mentioned that they maintain robust measures, including a dedicated team of professionals for well-being. So they said they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
And the legal response was, nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Did so.
Did not. Did too. Simon Cowell's production company was dealt a major legal challenge in 2022, when former participants of the reality talent show X Factor filed a lawsuit seeking millions of dollars in damages. The lawsuit was filed and six people were aiming for a minimum of $1.2 million each, claiming that their time on the show was marked by bullying, mistreatment, and neglect. One of the participants expressed, being on the show was a really tough experience. The effects have stayed with us for years. It's truly distressing. This is going to be a significant case. Our goal is to achieve justice and compensation for the time and money we invested in getting our lives back on track after dealing with the aftermath. Describing the challenging situations, the participant disclosed that many contestants grappled with sleep problems and emotional struggles even before going on stage. They said, no one seemed to care about our mental well-being. We felt like pawns in a bigger game. When I joined the show, I was full of confidence, ambition, and charisma. Now I'm deeply doubtful, emotional, anxious, and overwhelmed by nervousness.
That was the one that he said that would be stoned to death 2,000 years before.
That was him.
I had so much confidence until I was told I'd be killed in a medieval style.
It wasn't just on the show where Simon was finding himself singing sour notes. He's had a number of fairly high-profile exes that have come and gone. But in 2013, Cowell allegedly began dating an American woman named Lauren Silverman. The only problem was that Lauren Silverman was married to Andrew Silverman, one of Simon's closest friends.
Oh.
Now he took his best friend's girl.
Yep. On Wednesday, July 31st, 2013, the wealthy real estate developer announced his wife, Lauren, was about 10 weeks pregnant, and the father was Simon.
God. Your husband's dick is rubbish.
I just felt like I was on, like, Maury or something right there. I read the sentence, and y'all felt like the crowd.
Yeah, that's fucked
you
up.
You are not the father.
Wait a second. You're telling me that you've been bagging my wife? You've been shagging her, and now she's got a fucking bun in the oven? All of that is true.
The New York Post revealed that Andrew quietly filed divorce papers in New York City 2 weeks prior, citing adultery, and Andrew even names the British TV star and producer as a co-respondent in the papers. Cowell and the Silvermans were a happy trio back in January of 2012, where they were all photographed kicking back on a yacht during a St. Bart's vacation. Andrew's brother, Alexander Silverman, told the Post, "It's an unbelievable story of betrayal. It's a sad and tragic story." The paper goes on to cite other sources who insist that Andrew and Lauren weren't estranged when Lauren and Cowell's relationship began.
Doesn't even matter, man. Right. Doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
You can't. It doesn't.
No.
Dude, literally, if you guys got divorced and it's 40 years down the line and you're dead, you can't do that.
Right.
Especially when you have as many options as Simon Cowell has.
Yeah. Right.
Like, yeah. You know, it's not like some dude that just didn't have anything else.
No. And then, he just banged one up the fucking tunnel there and then got her pregnant, too, to add insult to injury.
Oh.
Score's going up.
In August of 2013, the Silvermans settled their divorce out of court, enabling Cowell to avoid being called as a witness in the divorce proceedings. He subsequently confirmed that Silverman was pregnant with his child, and she gave birth to their son Eric on February 14th, 2014.
What if he named the son after the ex-husband?
Andrew.
Oh. Yeah, he's like, just out of respect.
God. But his last name? Oh, my God.
Eric Andrew Cowell.
Yeah.
Simon did wind up marrying Laura Silverman, and they are still married today.
Boo. I was hoping they were going to get divorced.
Boo this man.
Yeah.
On August 8th, 2020, Simon broke his back after he fell off his new electric motorcycle.
I'm glad that this was the story after that one, because now I'm just fine. Yeah. I'm just thinking it's hilarious.
The incident occurred while he was testing it at his home in Malibu, California. Cowell was taken to the hospital where he underwent back surgery overnight. After the incident, he began eating animal-based food again in order to rebuild his strength. So he was a vegan prior to this, and after he wrecked the bike, he went back to regular food.
I thought you were going to say that he broke his face, like to talk about what Mikey was talking about.
No, he broke his back.
Yeah.
He just does a lot of Botox on his face.
What if that was like, it's a Stephen King, remember that Stephen King movie Thinner, where that guy, he's a big fat guy and he wants to lose weight and then he runs into the gypsy or whatever, she makes him lose all the weight. So it's like, you know, be careful what you wish for thing.
You just might get it.
Yeah, so somehow he gets a spell put on him by his wife's ex-husband, and that's what happened to his fucking face. He's like, all right then. He's like, you can have the old hag, but you look like a hag as well.
Most recently, Simon has taken his family out to the London countryside, not only to get away from the hustle and bustle of London, but also out of safety concerns. It was reported that before the Cowells moved out, they reportedly felt unsafe due to repeated intrusions. Despite investing more than $950,000 in security measures, including guard dogs, Cowell fell victim to multiple burglaries, prompting his decision to relocate to the Cotswolds, is where he lives now.
And now I immediately see her ex-husband driving off with a bag of shit. He's like, ah!
They wound up... They wound up selling their London home for $28.7 million, a whopping $57.3 million less than he initially asked for, just out of safety concerns. In 2015, thieves broke into his London home when the family slept and made off with valuables worth up to $1 million.
That's a fucking Someone didn't fucking drop the bag there.
Man. The incident left Cowell shaken, with the reality show judge expressing his frustration at the lack of response from his previously silent guard dogs. Determined to bolster security, Cowell has since acquired two German shepherds specifically trained for the task.
What did he hire first? Like some French bulldogs?
Yeah. The port corner just snoring. Yeah.
I've got two pugs. They can't even bite you because their mouth is... Yeah, dude. God, fuck Simon Cowell. I'm glad all this shit has happened to him.
Well, it gets better here in a minute. However, Cowell's security woes extended beyond London. In 2012, a brazen intruder armed with a brick breached his property while the TV personality was also at home. That one really shook him up.
And he rested that brick atop his flat fucking head. Simon Cowell, he's got that butt cut that doesn't help him either.
He does
either.
Have it a flat head. Yeah. But most recently at his new home, he's been the victim of another invader, moles.
Oh, I thought you were going to say bed bugs.
The man who sought solace from the hustle and bustle of London now finds himself embroiled in a battle against pesky varmints, wreaking havoc on a sprawling $13.2 million estate. But tranquility turned to turmoil as the serene landscape was overrun by molehills, transforming the once pristine property into what can only be described as Swiss cheese. And I saw a picture of his yard.
Yeah.
Shit's fucked up.
It
is like a beautiful, like, country London estate, and the yard is just fucked up.
Dude, rich people problems.
Dude, I just, like, imagine they put you on the beat where you're, like, a, you know, fucking entertainment news, and you're like, call Simon Cowell and, I don't know, get an update. And then the next thing, he's, like, droning on about all the moles in his yard. You're like, I got in the wrong career.
Reports indicate that the moles, and this sounds like a beat reporter's line here, seemingly undeterred by human presence, have ventured perilously close to the Cowell's mansion, with their voracious appetite for tunneling causing extensive damage to the gardens.
I'm always team mole, team bull, all that stuff. Animals, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you see one of those matadors get gored, you know, you're kind of like,
oh, got your ass.
Love him or hate him, or really don't give a fuck about him, Simon Cowell has been deemed by society to know and understand what is good in terms of music and look. Cowell has often argued that one of the reasons he's been so good at reaching a wide public is because he shares its tastes. As he was once quoted, in TV, film, and music, there's a lot of snobbery, and I don't like it. I've never been such a cultural snob. If I don't like French food, that doesn't make me a lesser person. I don't have sophisticated tastes. I have average tastes. If you looked at my collection of DVDs, you'd see Jaws and Star Wars. In the book library, you'd see John Grisham and Sidney Sheldon. And if you look in my fridge, it's like children's food, chips, milkshakes, yogurt. I would imagine there's a protein shake or two as well.
Okay.
And that, boys, is Simon Cowell.
All right. Fascinating. I didn't expect the mole talk. That one was a shocker.
Yep. That's okay. Like what he's up to now.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not, you know.
It's such a like pedestrian-ass story. Like, that's some shit you'd ask your neighbor about and wouldn't want to hear.
Yeah, totally. Like,
are the moles getting on my property? Okay, then shut the fuck up.
25 seconds in, you're like looking at him but thinking about something totally else.
Uh-huh. He's fucking moles, man.
Yeah, both my neighbors have had mole problems, but not me. And they've been very frustrated with it, and I'm just like, meh, okay.
I just don't even, I don't know. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get some final scores for Simon Cowell. Buddy, what you got?
All right, so Simon Cowell, I'm not surprised. You know, some of the, you know, top tens, you know, I'm also with Mikey. I felt like they hit a little bit harder back in the day than when we're repeating them here in the courtroom today.
I think it's because Randy didn't do them in a British accent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Subscribe to Patreon to get your the seven, top 17 list in a British accent.
As Paul McCartney.
So, but no, I do feel that, you know, I mean, there was the one chick who became a lawyer and, you know, really went after him in a sense. But I think that there are probably a lot more stories of the people that really, especially in the earlier days, went after their dreams and he just crushed them. And, you know, there's going to be some points taken up for that. Him going after his best friend's girl, getting her pregnant, and then marrying her and still being married. Yeah, that's just...
But he's not friends with that guy anymore.
Yeah, no. That's...
That guy's putting moles in his yard. Yeah. He said, step 7 of my plan. Step 6 was to break his back on his electric motorcycle.
And then break in with a brick.
That's right. Rested atop his stupid head.
So yeah, he's got some points taken up for that. You know, I do know that, you know, like overall today he is more of like, I know, like in the shows that he's producing and stuff like that, he is definitely a lot more accommodating to the contestants. He's a lot more just like, yeah, you know, you might want to work on this stuff more so than you sound like a fat cow type criticism and stuff like that. So, you know, but I mean, anybody that's in Hollywood or just in the entertainment business for that long, I mean, you're going to catch an earlier version with them. Everybody 20 years from where they started off from is going to be different at this point, at least for the most part. But so, yeah, I'm going to tick him up a little bit for stealing his best friend's girl and impregnating her.
Yeah.
And so for me, a final score, you know, I had him at a 6.0 originally. And, you know, I like where his British counterpart, Gordon Ramsay's at. And I've got him at a 6.48 as a final asshole score for Simon Cowell.
All right. 6.48 for Buddy. Mikey, what you got?
Yeah. So this is apparent to me. He's just a fucking blockhead Nepo baby. There's nothing. I mean, seriously, like I was always like, oh, well, I don't know what he did. Maybe he came up in the streets and then like got into music. No, he was fucking born into this shit. Yeah, his dad's like, yeah, oh, I'll get you a job of an EMI and fuck off back to whatever. And then like all of his stuff is like, yo, you got super lucky with some weird ass shit with like the Teletubbies. You know what I'm saying?
The Power Rangers.
Power Rangers.
Yeah. But, and those are jobs that you just get fed. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't like, oh, no, the Power Rangers is going to be huge. They're like, here's a fucking thing. We have to put an album out because, you know, it's a cash cow. So do this. You know, his insults, I think, you know, largely weak, considering I think he could have done way more damage. You know what I'm saying? He should have taken some notes from my man Pusha T on that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, bury somebody. And then at the end of it, he broke bro code.
Yeah,
bro
that's
code,
a big
homie.
One.
It's like, bad. Like you, all of that is so just gnarly. You know what I'm saying?
With so many options.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fucking banging her, getting her pregnant, being like, "Sorry, man." You know? Well,
it's mine now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all, and it sounded like it was so bad that like a mutual friend was like, "Oh, it's fucked up, dude." Yeah. So you know, it's like
it was
way
his,
worse.
It was his brother.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The guy's brother.
So they were not separated at the time.
Yeah. Oh, 100% not. Yeah. No, he was like blasting her out of St. Farts in their fucking yacht or whatever it was. I don't give a shit. Honestly, he's a bad person. I didn't know. I'm gonna put him at a 7.5. He sucks.
Ooh, 7.5 for Mikey.
Yeah, man. He's like
same level as Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't Gordon Ramsay. Didn't he also break bro code?
I think he did. I think I remember that correctly.
And I think he's still married to the.
I think so, but I don't. Yeah, I don't know which one. Yeah. I have to go back and listen. Which
I have to go back and listen to that one. I don't know.
But I love the
kids.
The linear build on Randy's story here because it went from he fucked his best friend's wife, got her pregnant. And then he broke his back on a motorcycle, and I was like, oh, yeah. It felt good.
And I was piecing together the story. Yeah. I thought, you know, where do I put this nugget?
You nailed it.
Yeah.
It felt like when he told someone that they suck on the show. You're like, that was necessary.
All right, Randy, bring us home.
All right. So, you know, going into it, I kind of had an idea. And doing the research on it, I didn't know about the adultery and kind of the scumbag line. I don't have him quite as high, but I think I'm going to wind him up at 6.33. I'm going to match him up with Nancy Grace.
Okay.
6.33.
That's a good parallel. I mean, they both seem like she would definitely fuck her best friend's husband.
Yeah, and have the baby.
Yeah, she could. She probably would be. She's one of those types who would get like some weird in vitro shit. She's like 55 and pops out like seven.
I'm pregnant.
That's it. Straight up, yeah, she'd have like a fucking like a podcast about it and some, you know, just would suck.
Like we were talking about before the show, she'd be cupping your butt.
Come in me. Come in me.
No, no, Nancy, no.
Don't come. Oh, fuck.
I'm going to cup in your bob.
All right. With a 6.48 from Buddy, a 7.5 from Mikey, and a 6.33 from Randy, Simon Cowell's final asshole score is a 6.77.
All right, 6.77, fun territory here. We've got Conor McGregor at 6.74, Cardi B at 6.83. So we've got McGregor, Simon Cowell, and Cardi B now in that range at 6.74 to 6.83.
And I was talking to Randy earlier in the week about Conor McGregor and his latest movie,
Roadhouse.
Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah. You know, I knew it was going to suck. It's always going to be good. I'm more disappointed in Jake Gyllenhaal.
We are very disappointed in Jake Gyllenhaal, yeah. But I'm also disappointed in Conor as well. Much more so in Jake.
Yeah.
But that movie fucking sucked.
There's no way it was going to be good.
I was hoping it was going to be good.
Dude, that movie was the original was accidentally good.
Oh, yeah.
It was, you can't do that intentionally.
Yeah.
You can't make a movie that's so bad that it's good on purpose because it just doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah. You can't reboot it. And you can't get someone who's like a really good actor.
It just felt like Jake Gyllenhaal mailed it in the whole time.
Yeah.
I just can't believe you even agreed to it. I was like, what are you thinking? That's something that's meant for, I don't know, just like honestly.
One of the Hemsworth brothers.
Good call.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Liam would definitely, that would have been so much better.
Right?
Yeah. Or what's his name? The funny guy everybody
Chris
likes.
Pratt?
No. The Mint Mobile.
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds would do a great job.
Yeah.
Because he would play, I don't know. Maybe
he would play it up. He would act it up.
You do it as a comedy, like they did with 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Awesome. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Asshole Court. As always, check us out on our social media platforms and give us a review, 5 stars, if you don't mind. But definitely shout us out on your comments and let us know what you think about the show. Like we always do from the inbox, we'd love to interact with you guys. And you never know, you could get a shout out on the show as well.
That's right. So crank that hog.
Absolutely. And as always,
or feed that child while listening to our show.
Yes.
That's right.
That sounded very creepy with feed that child.
And if you want more of us, go check us on at patreon.com/AHC podcast. Got to put the full thing in because we are explicit. You can't just search for us. You got to put the whole thing in your bar. You'll find us, subscribe, figure out the tier that you want, and then dive in. We got a whole lot of extra stuff on there. So check it out. As always, we want you to be kind to one another, and we will see you next time on Asshole Court.